My name is Owen Gabriel. Oh, my name is Owen Gabrielson. I'm with Far Law Group. I represent Lucy and Jerry Knoll and Knoll Greenwater Properties. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal.
All right. Proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. First of all, thank you, Your Honors. Thank you to the court for its hard work. And I want to take a few seconds just to thank my opposing counsel, whom I was not acquainted with before this case, and I might be able to call him my friend today.
We'll see about that.
I'm not going to go through the facts unless anyone has specific questions of the facts. I'd like the court here to reverse the trial court, and there's several reasons for it. But I'm going to start out with the first reason that the trial court erred, and my friend erred, is Cornett v. West. And in that case, it holds that when you have two trustees who are joined as co-trustees, you need joinder of both trustees for the trustees' actions to be valid. Cornett v. West is a Washington Supreme Court case. In Washington, personal representatives, or I should say co-personal representatives, are treated as trustees, first of all. Second of all, Cornett v. West explicitly stated that where one trustee without the joinder of the other borrowed money, that was not enforceable against the trust, which is exactly...
Don't both trustees have to be qualified?
Yes, Your Honor. And that's what we're going to, is qualification. And the argument here by my friend is that Jerry, my client, as a trustee, was not qualified because he did not file a piece of paper, which is a condition of appointment under RCW 11.36.010. And a response to that is several fold. First of all, 11.36.010 does not state, it specifically states who is not qualified, and those are minors, felons, and certain corporations with certain limited exceptions. It does not state that a non-resident is not qualified, first of all. Second of all, and I think it's in footnote 11 of Business Finance's brief, they distinguish Cornett v. West and say, well, in In re Estate of Gordon and Borman, they were non-residents that weren't qualified because they were non-residents. And well, first of all, those discussions or those arguments happened in the estate matter, okay? In an ongoing estate. We don't have an ongoing estate here. This is really a collateral attack. Second of all, and I just noticed this, in 1957, Borman was decided, and in 1958, Gordon was decided. 11.36.010, when those cases were decided, specifically held that non-residents were not qualified under the statute. The statute was changed in 1959. And so here, with the statute being changed, and the statute saying that they are not that the non-residents are not qualified, sorry for the double negative, he is qualified.
Now, well, don't you have a different problem under 1128.040, which says if an executor, so assume you are right on your argument that your client was qualified, but if they're out of state, someone else must be appointed unless there is another executor, in which case the estate shall be administered by such other executor until the disqualification be removed. And your client, I think on this record, never returned to the state. And that would suggest that the other executor had the authority to act.
Yes, Your Honor. First of all,
alone. Very different from the West case as a matter of statute.
Thank you, Your Honor. Two things. First of all, it talks about qualification. And I don't think that the statute provides that a non-resident is not qualified. But second, and this is key, it's not automatic. And that's what they're asking for, is it's automatic.
My point is this statute talks about an executor who has been appointed not being authorized to act while he's out of state, and it's automatic under the statute.
I would disagree, Your Honor, that it doesn't state that. RCW 11.28.040 says that when you have two executors named and one executor is not going to act or is out of state, then the other may be appointed as executor as opposed to administrator with will and next or something else. I would point you, to, Your Honor, to 11.28.010, which specifically provides if there are persons appointed, and one becomes disqualified, then the letter shall be granted to the other persons appointed therein. Craig Knoll here was never granted letters after or at any time when he, Jerry was out of state or after he was appointed.
They were both appointed
at the exact same time. So
one had a disability and the other didn't, and doesn't 040 allow the one who isn't disabled to act?
It allows them to apply. It says that that person may be appointed by the court to be the sole executor, even when the will says there are two executors. And I would also point your honors to RCW 11.28.250 that says that once they've been appointed, they have to be removed, and that's when the power ceases. And that's really important, because otherwise what business finance is saying is there was never any power to begin with. And that's in direct contradiction to the probate court's order that says he is qualified.
But if you look at 11.28.050, it says when any of the executors shall not qualify, and it's clear he doesn't qualify, or having qualified shall become disqualified or be removed. So it sets up, there's three different ways for that to operate, and it doesn't necessarily seem to require that you actually be removed. It can be any one of those three things: not qualified, having qualified, shall become unqualified, or be removed, right?
Certainly, Your Honor. And that, to hold in business finance's favor, you're going to have to add language to 11.36.010 that says, yes, there's another person who's not qualified. We're going to go back to the pre-1959 enactment of that statute and say that a non-resident is not qualified when they are qualified. It's a condition of appointment. It's not a qualification, the way that term is used in all of the statutes.
Well, but even assuming he was properly appointed, the brothers were both properly appointed.
Yes, Your Honor.
There's a disability on acting when you're out of state if you don't have a registered agent. Please answer that.
Your Honor, it doesn't say that there's a disability, and I'd say that what you're asking for is to eliminate the end of RCW 11.28250 that says that we have to revoke the letters, and there's going to be a hearing, and that is when the powers of the personal representative cease. So if that's correct, then, and there isn't a qualification there, which Jerry was qualified, we cannot ignore the end of RCW 11.28250, which provides when those powers cease. We can't ignore that language. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Good morning. May it please the Court, my name is Jim Fowler, and I'll try to be brief here. I think the Court understands our arguments and articulated those. There's a couple things I want to address. The argument advanced on 11.36.010, the difference between subsection 1, where the statute talks about who is not qualified, and then subsection 6, where the statute talks about non-residents. I think the argument is that just because a non-resident may not be appointed, they are still somehow qualified. There's language elsewhere in the code that makes clear that's incorrect. I think that's incorrect logically, but also the last clause, 11.36040, uses the phrase, a non-resident of this state may qualify as provided in RCW 11.36.010. So I think it's very clear that under 11.36.010 and 11.28.040, you are not qualified if you're a non-resident and you haven't appointed an agent. I think that's an issue. There's a difference in language in the first subsection of 010 and subsection 6, but that difference in language does not have any difference in meaning. After that, I think Your Honors have made the points. 040, it's automatic. There's nothing that requires court action. As Judge Spearman pointed out under 050, there's three circumstances for disqualification someone. One is when they shall not qualify. One is when they become disqualified. And the third is when they're removed. And only the third requires court action. And in this case, it's undisputed, Jerry Knoll never qualified. He always lived very remotely in Alaska, and he never met the standard.
He never qualified, but he was appointed.
Yes. And as Your Honor.
So do we get past the qualification issue? Because we're not sitting as a court in probate to determine whether he was qualified. We have an appointed executor. And the question is, was he authorized, was Craig authorized to act without Jerry?
And I believe the answer is right in 040 and or 050, which says if someone shall not qualify, if someone shall become disqualified, then the other executor is entitled to act on his own. And the argument that they raised under 250, I think they've got the intent of that statute wrong. 250 provides a mechanism to remove someone who's been validly appointed. The intent of the statute is not to give power to someone who should never have power in the first place. It turns the purpose of the statute on its head. So I believe the answer's in the language of the statute.
So you're rejecting the argument that 040 should be read as simply saying, when it refers to other executor who shall accept, that really means has to apply. There has to be an application for some other executor to accept. That's your opponent's argument. You're rejecting
In their reply brief?
I think the
argument in the reply brief seemed to distinguish between a personal representative and an executor. And I don't think that distinction exists. For example, in 11.02050, there's definitions for Chapter 11 of the RCW. And the definition of executor includes personal representative, and the definition of personal representative includes executor. So I don't think there's any distinction there. Yes, we'd reject that. There's been a lot of issues raised. We focused on one. I don't want to talk on and on if I don't need to, but I'd be glad to answer any questions the court has about any of the other issues, if there are any at all, but otherwise I'll leave time on the table unless there's anything the court would like to hear from me about. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. And I would also call Mr. Gabrielson my friend for the record.
Having a friendly morning here.
Your Honors, RCW 11.28.250 talks about or is permanently removed from the state. And even then, it says that it provides when those powers cease. And it provides.
I think we're not focusing on permanent removal. No one suggested he was, in fact, removed. The question is whether or not his authority was suspended while he was out of state.
Certainly, Your Honor.
Without an agent.
And I would say that it can't be automatically executing, because if it's automatically executing, then we're ignoring RCW 11.28.010, which says letters shall be granted to the other persons. As we pointed out in our reply brief, even county local rules all provide, even with a name change, new letters issue.
But isn't that an either or? So if there's one nominee and they're disqualified, then letters must be issued to another person.
Well,
here we had multiple persons.
That's, and I think that's a really an excellent point, Your Honor, because then if we go back to 1136.040 or even 11.36.010, when they're talking about the non-resident, they say as personal representative, not personal representatives.
Yeah, but and there's also a provision in this RCW that all singulars are plural and plurals are singular.
So in this case, we had a Washington resident, and that was Craig. So the policy behind having that resident agent is fulfilled, notwithstanding the fact, again, the probate court found him qualified. And the other issue with this is allowing a personal representative or co-personal representative to interlope between a state. From a policy perspective, from a title company's perspective, that is completely unworkable. Because now a title company is called upon to look behind every letters testamentary that are issued by the court, and they'll see one person and say, well, were they a resident at this time? Or perhaps Jerry Knoll today decides to appoint me as a in-state resident, does that then make all of a sudden all his acts prior acts valid, non-pro-tunk?
Potentially voidable, perhaps.
So, you know,
and I mean, notice issues do lead to those things.
Certainly, certainly, Your Honor. So, and there's no infirmity, there's no allegation here, there's any fraud, anything. It's really, this is a looking behind the probate court's order to invalidate a deed of trust that says that it's only signed by one personal representative when Business Finance knew the whole time there were two personal representatives. And I'll point you to Exhibit 226, a deed signed just 3 days earlier that has both personal representatives signing the deed. Do you have any other questions, Your Honor? My time is up.
Thank you.
Thank you.